EPA has delegated their authority to the State Water Resources Control Board. And so we specifically requested that the EPA allow the state agency to issue the permits and basically regulate wastewater discharge on the site. EPA declined to allow that, and the tribe was not interested in having the state agency regulate their discharge. However, EPA did commit to requiring that the discharge comply with California Title 22 regulations, which is basically what the state agency would implement in issuing their permit on the site. And we're also concerned just as far as EPA being able to continually monitor the discharge and water quality on the site. So we specifically, in part of the agreement, the ISA agreement, required that any monitoring reports, any communication with EPA, any compliance requirements of their permit be provided to the county. So the county is aware of any violations or any ongoing water quality concerns associated with the project. From a water supply standpoint, I don't know if you want me to just go into a description of water supply. The tribe is proposing to use groundwater as their source of water on the site. When we initially got involved in this, the tribe was proposing a 2,000 slot and 80 gaming tables as part of their project component, or their what they were proposing for the project. And we had serious concerns about the adequate supply of water from groundwater on the site. And so we got into fairly detailed discussions, had two separate hydrogeologists evaluate what the tribe was identifying in their hydrogeologic analysis of the water supply. And based on that, our focus was on trying to limit the water demand associated with the project. And so we strongly encouraged changes to the project, a reduction in the project size. And that, I think, is one of the components of why the tribe decided to reduce their actual number of slots and total square footage of gaming. Based on the substantially smaller gaming operations, we did detailed analysis of the groundwater supply. And we're still concerned about the availability of the water associated with the project, and so created a detailed monitoring, groundwater monitoring program that includes basically monitoring surrounding wells, putting in additional wells in public rights of way to be able to monitor water supply, and establishing basically a threshold at which the tribe would need to scale back water use, implement conservation measures, or just stop pumping. And so we feel fairly confident that the monitoring program that we put together protects groundwater in the area. And we've also established basically a monitoring group that local residents can join and participate to have a sense of what's going on with water supply. So if there are any more questions related to that, I can go into more detail.
Okay. Could you step to the microphone, please?
Jill Curran, I own. Has the wastewater permit been issued?
It has not.
Okay. Okay. We'll move over to roads. So for Larry Peterson, our Public Works Agency Director, what improvements are planned and when are they supposed to be completed?
The major improvements planned for this casino involve three traffic signals, one at Buena Vista Road and 88, and one at Highway 12, Liberty Road in San Joaquin County and Highway 88. And the third traffic signal to be at Coal Mine Road at the entrance to the casino. The ones on Highway 88, because those are Caltrans state facilities, will be, if Caltrans requires them, or when Caltrans requires them, maybe a better way to say it. And so that's going to require the tribe to have a separate agreement and a separate determination from Caltrans as to when and exactly what those signals and any turning lane improvements are going to be required on Highway 88 at those two locations. In terms of the signal in front of the casino at the entrance, that has to be in and operational before the casino actually opens for business. The other improvements that we're requiring in this ISA are the rehabilitation of Buena Vista Road and Coal Mine Road. It's been designated as the gateway, I think that's our term for it, the gateway entrance. It's also the designated roads that they have to use for any of the construction equipment, any of the dirt hauling and construction activity. They have to use Coal Mine Road, of course, to get to their entrance coming off of Buena Vista Road. Also, we're requiring them that any of their promotional material, which gives directions how to get to the casino, that those will be the roads they designate as how to get to the casino, for example. Now, there's also the question of Jackson Valley Road west from Buena Vista Road to Highway 88. And when the traffic engineers who did their tribal environmental EIR, their traffic engineers were from San Diego, and when you look at a map that has lines on it showing roadways, they really just all tend to look alike, and traffic engineers will pick the shortest distance from point A to point B, and they'll say that's the preferred route, and that's what they did. They identified Jackson Valley Road West as the likely route people would go. Jackson Valley Road West is not the, we don't think, the best way to get in and out of the casino. We'd like to see them use Buena Vista Road. They've agreed to that, to designate it as that, to have the signal light there, and to rehabilitate the roadway all the way through to the casino. In addition, we're going to have them install traffic calming measures, mostly in the form of stop signs and, signage, stop signs ahead, that type of thing. We think anybody that tends to go down Jackson Valley Road and has to go through three experiences of stopping at stop signs and starting up and getting going again, compared to going down a fully operational traffic signal at Highway 88 and Buena Vista Road, Buena Vista Road is going to be basically rebuilt from the bottom up to a traffic index of 8.5, which is a very sturdy, heavy-duty cross-section, new pavement, as well as Coal Mine Road. That given those two options, people will quickly learn that going the gateway entrance is the better way to go. So those are the kinds of improvements that they're going to have to pay for: all the costs, all the engineering, all the design review, all the permitting, all the state agency costs and reviews for all those improvements. Excuse me? Yes, thank you. In terms of the maintenance on these the county road sections, the tribe has agreed to a $75,000 initial year of payment that would cover such things as the energy costs for the traffic signals, and for striping and signage and any maintenance that would be necessary along those roads. And that $75,000 initial year payment is also has an escalator clause associated with it based on a California index, so that as those costs to us go up, the cost of the tribe has to pay more for that. Also, the tribe has to pay approximately $1.4 million initially up front by the time they open, for their traffic mitigation fee. If you were to take out a permit, for example, to build a house in Amador County, you pay a traffic mitigation fee associated with traffic back and forth to your residence. So they're paying at the same rate, the $300 per trip. They're paying that times their estimated traffic. So we also have a way to charge them more after a year. We will be measuring the traffic. And if it's more than 5% of that, then they have to pay the additional fee. Likewise, if it's less, then they'll get a refund. So they'll be paying the traffic mitigation fee. Lastly, they're also in the ISA, is the agreement that they're going to pay for litter pickup all along Coal Mine Road from Buena Vista Road to North Comanche Parkway and Buena Vista Road from 88 to Coal Mine Road, because we know there's a lot of litter associated with the traffic going back and forth to a casino.
Okay, another one. How much less do you estimate the county will get in an arbitration award in comparison to the ISA? Kathy, Martha?
Well, I'll try and take a stab at that. Of course, some of that is an unknown, as all litigation is an unknown. But what we know is that the compact that the tribe signed with the state describes what it is that the arbitrator gets to decide in deciding whether to pick the county's offer, last best and final offer for mitigation, or the tribe's last best and final offer for mitigation. And I think it's important to read it. It's very short. It says in the compact that the state signed with the tribe, it says the arbitrator shall be limited to awarding only one or the other of the two offers submitted without modification based upon that proposal which best provides feasible mitigation of significant effects on the off-reservation environment and on public safety and most reasonably compensates for public services pursuant to Section 10.8.8 without unduly interfering with the principal objectives of the project, meaning the casino, or imposing environmental mitigation measures which are different in nature or scale from the type of measures that have been required to mitigate impacts of a similar scale of other projects in the surrounding area, to the extent there are other such projects. So basically, the mitigation proposed has to be feasible, and it can't interfere with the principal objectives of the casino. If the county's offer doesn't meet that criteria and the tribe's does, we run the risk that the arbitrator would say that he has no jurisdiction, he or she has no jurisdiction to accept the county's proposal because it exceeds that which the arbitrator is given authority to decide in the compact. So I can't really put a dollar figure on it. There are certain things that the tribe agreed to in this proposal that arguably might not fit within this narrow definition of what feasibly mitigates and doesn't interfere with the principal objectives of the casino. That's something we're going to have to look at if we go to arbitration and make our best guess at what we can propose that we can defend and argue that the arbitrator should choose. But there are certainly particular things in here that aren't typically the kinds of things that an arbitrator would award for mitigation, like, for example, the community fund proposal and some of those things.
The other unknown is that we don't know what the offer that the tribe is going to come up with as its last best offer will be. We do know that in their tribal EIR, for example, they proposed a payment of $300,000 for law enforcement services. Whether they're going to stick with that or whether they're going to up it toward anywhere near towards the $2.7 million that is in the current agreement, we just don't know.
I have another question, but first I'd like to get back just briefly to the question with regards to the Jackson Rancheria's budget of 3.7, ours of 2.7, basically $1 million difference. A couple of things I forgot to mention earlier. One is that the tribal police are required and paid to patrol the casino grounds. We are not. We are a response-only operation to respond to calls for service down there. They also respond to things that we are not going to respond to. There's different transports of monies. There's keys locked in cars. There's a lot of those things that if we did respond to, our costs would be substantially more than the 2.7 that we came to. So there's a difference in the role and responsibilities of the tribal police on the rancheria versus what we would respond to and what we do respond to for Jackson. I do have another question, though, that came in. The comment is, I have higher confidence in our public safety professionals, so thank you for that. It says, but nobody is talking about the victims. How many deaths related to the rancheria? How many hospitalizations? How many drug overdoses? How many spousal abuses? How many dependent children put into foster care? And why has no data been collected from other law enforcement agencies. A couple comments. Obviously, we have had some deaths related to casino. The bus accident that occurred not that long ago that was down by the county line, I think there was some information that that was either one or both parties were either going to coming from the casino with regards to that. So there was some deaths that occurred and hospitalizations out of that. Drug overdoses, I'm not familiar with a lot of drug overdose calls medically that goes to the casino. We do see some medical calls to the casino, heart attacks, falls, things of that nature from the ambulance service. Spousal abuse, again, those are because of the transitory nature of the people that we see at the casino for the most part. If there are spousal abuse cases occurring as a result of loss of funds or whatever it may be, it's probably occurring outside the county when they get back to their location of residence. We're not responding to a lot of spousal abuse cases at the casino. As far as dependent children put into foster care, I'm not that familiar with much of a load with regards to those either. The question came up, why has there been no data collected from other law enforcement agencies? With regards to certain aspects of law enforcement, there has been, and that's what we use for comparison basis to get our numbers. We track the arrests, not only Jackson Ranch, Rhea, Cache Creek, Thunder Valley, the calls for service, the jail impacts. One of the big figures for us was when Cache Creek Casino went from a non-alcohol-serving casino to an alcohol-serving casino, their calls for service to the sheriff went up 30%. That is factored into our numbers. Those were our part of our considerations for the numbers that we came up with for our deputy sheriffs. We do have an opportunity, as I said, to gather better statistics as a result of the 950 casino build-out versus when they go to the 1650, an opportunity to make adjustments. I've already spoken with a couple of the other chiefs with regards to the need, particularly in Ione, to be able to track impacts so that we can come back with those, because right now it's an unknown quantity. It's important for the DA, as he said earlier, to be able to track the prosecutions and what that impact is in case time and DA investigator time and attorney time and all those things to be able to come up with that solid number. We have an opportunity to do that. I hope that answers the question.
I did want to respond a little bit to the difference between the arbitration we know on there and this particular agreement on the fire protection services side. In the original tribal EIR, they referred a lot to, they used a lot of different methodologies to figure out what their fair share of fire protection services would be. And as I pointed out earlier and you're aware of, it's a pretty much a volunteer system. So when they plug into a volunteer system, those costs are very low. And that was one thing that came up. I think early on in meeting with the tribe, I think they realized, well, we made it very clear to them, that this was like putting a small city in a very rural area, not suited for that. And in comparing other service areas that casinos have gone into where they can plug into existing infrastructure, that was another thing they referred to. We'll pay our fair share of plugging into the infrastructure. Well, there is no infrastructure down there as far as paid fire protection. So the amount of money in this agreement for fire protection, I think, is close to $3 million. It's very similar to the law enforcement side, and that their original proposal was a fraction of that. That's the difference between those two.
I have two questions that came in. If the county continues to fight, will there be more risk of losing some or most of what has been accomplished? That's always a risk. You have to weigh that. We don't know what the tribe, what the investor is feeling, because the investor is the one calling the shots here. The investor could say, let's just go ahead and give them everything in arbitration. Our negotiators don't feel that's a very good likelihood, but we just don't know. Second question is, local support is critical to the building of a casino. A person states they've been told that. We feel the tribe wants an agreement because it at least gives the appearance that there's some solidarity between the tribe and the county. In the 2004 compact, the governor put some language in there that gives the local entities, the local county, the ability to go in and negotiate the impacts. I don't think it says anything about support other than mitigating the impacts and as far as anything else goes, I just believe that the tribe wants an agreement. They want the appearance that we're friends.
That leads us to how would this ISA, how would accepting this ISA affect the Plymouth casino situation? Kathy, want to take that one?
I have a similar question here, too, so I'll answer two questions at once. The two cases are very different, and I'll just say that straight up, that the Buena Vista situation involves the federal government having made a decision that the land is eligible for gaming, that the tribe can conduct gaming on that land, and the governor signing a compact with the tribe. So all of those things have happened before the county was involved in it at all. That's not true in the Ione situation. In Ione, the federal government did say that the land was eligible for gaming, and there's a shorthand name for that. It's a Indian lands determination, and all that means is that the solicitor's office of the Department of Interior has decided that the land that was acquired by the tribe is eligible. But in order for that tribe to have any gaming on the land, they will have to take a second step and put the land into trust. And the county is committed to fighting that process of putting the land into trust, including arguing that the land, in fact, is not eligible for gaming because it isn't Indian land, as federal law defines Indian land. In addition to that, that tribe would have to get a compact with the governor, and the governor has taken a position before the Department of Interior that the land is not Indian land in filings with the Department of Interior. So at this point, the Ione situation is very, very different. When and if the federal government gives us notice that they think they're going to take the land into trust, at that point the county, pursuant to the judge's ruling earlier, a few months ago, we'll be able to file suit again challenging the fee to trust application and argue the issue of whether the land is Indian land. So the two, I will say this, both are expensive. Both involve a tremendous commitment of resources by the county in order to fight, but the two are not related in how they're being approached because they're very different in how they're situated.
Doug, did you have some water questions?
I did. Actually, wastewater and water questions. The first one, when the wastewater leaves the site via Jackson Creek, whose jurisdiction will it be under, EPA or California Regional Water Quality Control Board? It is under EPA's jurisdiction. What they require as part of the permit is that monitoring be conducted in the drainage downstream from their discharge. And the monitoring is implemented to ensure that the discharge water quality levels comply with the permit requirements, that they comply with the basin plan requirements. The basin plan is basically what the State Region Water Quality Control Board has established for water bodies within the Central Valley, and they identify specific beneficial uses and water quality objectives to ensure that those beneficial uses aren't affected. And it also is required to comply with the California Toxics Rule for any discharges. And the second question, what is East Bay MUD's position on accepting the discharge? I can't speculate on what their position is, but typically if there's a discharge that is complying with permit requirements, then I wouldn't imagine they would... you have a specific position on it. It's generally their concern is if it's substantially degrading water quality. Another question is, does the tribe have a plan B for water and wastewater if the identified data does not match reality? From a wastewater standpoint, we specifically included mitigation requirements that if they're not complying with their permit requirements, and if EPA is not enforcing those, obviously we would get involved, the county would get involved in trying to ensure those are enforced. Based on the way the agreement is set up, they could be taken to Superior Court. But also, we specifically required that additional technology be implemented to ensure wastewater treatment is being effectively implemented on the site. The main treatment that you would put in place is what's called a reverse osmosis system. It's a very expensive system put in place basically to ensure that you have the highest quality water you can get as far as wastewater. The tribe actually identified that as an option if they're not able to meet their permit requirements in their tribal EIR, and so we specifically required that they implement additional wastewater treatment on the site if they're not achieving their water quality objectives. And from the water side, we specifically identified in the ISA that groundwater is their only source of water, and that if they are intending to identify another source of water, that it basically is a reopener. There would be a renegotiation of the agreement, and if they wanted to identify another source of water, they would need to do detailed environmental analysis. It would obviously be off reservation, so there would need to be CEQA analysis or California Environmental Quality Act analysis. The county would likely be the lead agency. The water, Amador Water Agency may be the lead agency on that as well. But it would be a fairly extensive process if they actually were trying to get a secondary source of water with the project. Right now, the way the monitoring plan is set up, it basically restricts the amount of water. If they don't have enough water or they have a situation where they're causing significant off-reservation impacts on groundwater, they need to restrict their pumping on the site, implement other measures, recycling efforts, limit their water use, or turn off their pumping.
You answered my second part of the question for wastewater pretty well. The first part, though, I probably didn't word it well. They do not have identified a second source of water at this time.
They, in their tribal EIR, they identified some sources of secondary water, but they did not do any environmental analysis, and they did not propose to actually use any of those secondary sources of water. And we specifically included language in the ISA that states that groundwater is their sole source of water. If they propose to get a secondary source of water, it basically reopens the agreement to renegotiation, and there will be subsequent environmental review and consultation with the county.
What was that?
Let me just add for your review, in page 3 of the ISA, it's not just renegotiation but county approval. So the county must approve a secondary source of water, whatever they propose to use.
Did they identify anything?
They identified connecting to Amador Water Agency sources. I don't recall. I don't know, Larry, if you recall the other. They talked about JVID water sources. I know they had other groundwater pumping off-site that they would pipe or truck to the site. There was a variety of other options included in their tribal EIR.
Thank you.
And I had one more question that is actually sounds like a water question, but I think is more of a legal question. It said, should the water level drop below the benchmark for the water table, how is the turnoff the pump order going to be enforced? If the tribe should choose not to abide and obey, is the sheriff going to be allowed to go into the national grounds and turn it off and lock the pump? So I think I'll throw that to Kathy.
Thank you,
sir. Martin wants to answer. He can as well.
I could give it to the sheriff.
It's a team effort up here.
Exhibit D. Is it D? Of the ISA, is the groundwater modeling, monitoring, and mitigation plan. And essentially, the tribe has committed to comply with whatever the hydrologists that are the experts hired by the are chosen by the tribe and the county require in terms of mitigation. And if there's a dispute, there's an independent hydrologist whose job it is to make a decision about what mitigation measures are necessary. The tribe specifically agreed to comply with whatever orders the monitoring group issues that are necessary to mitigate their off-reservation effects on groundwater. And in addition to that, the tribe has agreed that the county can enforce this agreement, the terms of this agreement, which includes their promise to comply with the mitigation measures ordered by the monitoring group in California Superior Court, in state court. So there is a process within the water section specifically to deal with disputes and a promise by the tribe to comply. If they don't do that, then the county can enforce this agreement in state court.
This is by far about the weakest link in this whole agreement. Sure, it would have been a lot better if the tribe would have done their monitoring, their modeling and monitoring before. Any other business that started up in the county, we would require them to be able to prove that they have enough water to operate. We wouldn't wait until they start affecting people's wells. So this is the best that could be done through negotiation. The tribe would not agree to do the modeling and monitoring before the casino was started.
Okay, we need to change the tape so it'll be just a second.